I love to see banking as a force for good and force for economic transformation and economic opportunity, not just for people like me, you know, entrepreneurs, but even people trying to buy houses or invest in themselves or just remove the financial friction from their life and the uncertainty and the risks and the complexity.
Welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup, and today I am very excited to be joined by Dominic Miartin. He comes to us as the president and CEO of American Bancorp Incorporated, American Pride Bank, and New Republic Bank. Dominic also serves as vice chairman of Optus Bank and Optus Financial Corporation. Dominic is a regular contributor to NPR's Marketplace and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, American Banker, and other national outlets. He was appointed to the FDIC Community Bank Advisory Board in 2022 and reappointed in 2023. And he was named EY Entrepreneur of the Year for the Southeast U.S. So, Dominic, you have been busy professionally, and I appreciate you taking time to join us today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. I'm looking forward to it.
Whenever we start out with an episode, we like to just get a little bit of background. Would you be willing to share some of your professional background, how you got into banking, and what has brought you to your point professionally today?
Yeah, so definitely a very atypical journey to banking. I think there's some other friends I have in the industry who had a similar path, but I'm definitely an accidental banker. So I didn't know how banks worked, but I did have a bank account. I still have the same bank account since I was 16 when I moved to America as an exchange student.
I love that same bank account. Yeah. What a cool story.
Yeah. It was a little bank in Arkansas that was acquired by Boatman's Bank, then Nations Bank, then was a Wortham Bank at one point, somewhere along, and then of course today is Bank of America.
So you landed with Bank of America.
So, despite my disappointment with some of the large banks, I still have that little legacy bank account because of that, all those relationships that I've built with it over the years, financial relationships.
Yep.
So it's very sticky. But I do want to say for the record, almost all of my money is with community banks, particularly mission-driven banks. So
I love hearing that.
Don't tell Bank of America, but I definitely use it only for some transactions. But all my liquidity spends the night working for America instead of against America.
And I like that.
Yeah, and that's really how I got into banking, is very much through the mission lens of how can we create opportunities for people like me and other either first generation Americans or new Americans or starting entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. That really need that relationship, want to be able to call someone, want to be able to relate to it. Mm-hmm. And I remember what really drove me to it is an experience actually my wife had, who was a CEO of an organization. Mm-hmm. And she had to go into a bank branch. I remember this in Little Rock, Arkansas, when we lived in Little Rock.
Okay.
And had to open up some CDs. She had some investors or supporters who came in, wanted to do the banking, and she as the executive director or CEO had to go into the bank. And she was, she's top performer in school, was a student body president, went to graduate school, went to Harvard, all this. And she was so intimidated and uncomfortable walking into the branch.
Sure.
And for someone of her caliber and intellect to just be uneasy with that.
Yep. Yes.
That was actually, I remember that story. That was so pivotal for me. Like, we have to change this, because imagine if that's happening to her, how many more people that may not have the same level of intellect or drive or experience with financial institutions now coming into a bank branch, they want to start their business or they want to open a business account. Mm-hmm. And they're so intimidated by these terms and these complex ideas.
Yeah.
So the first bank I joined was a very mission-driven bank. It was founded for the purpose of really creating positive economic opportunities in the most distressed parts of America.
Nice.
I'm doing the same thing today in slightly different community, but I love I love to see banking as a force for good and force for economic transformation and economic opportunity, not just for people like me, you know, entrepreneurs, but even people trying to buy houses or invest in themselves or just remove the financial friction from their life and the uncertainty and the risks and the complexity and the overwhelming fancy banking terms that we throw around. So my concept has always been, let's remove the financial friction. Let's use technology to bring bankers closer to their customers, not remove them.
I like that. I like that. Bringing the relationship closer instead of creating distance with technology. I love that.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you speaking to that concept that banks can be intimidating for some people. Those of us who work within banking, we might be used to everything from the acronyms, the terminology, and even like the marble floors and kind of the formalized like building fronts of some banks. But I'm going to share now, I'm not a first generation American. I'm the type of person who maybe should be comfortable working, walking into a bank. But the first time I walked into the bank that then became my employer and got my start into my career in banking, I was also intimidated. I was working a blue collar job. I had a modest paycheck. And I remember thinking, is this a bank for me? Is this the type of place where I am welcome? I came to learn that the staff was incredibly friendly, that I was certainly welcome. I opened an account and I actually later became an employee there. But that is definitely a feeling that I even resonate with, not quite the same background as your wife. I don't have a Harvard education. But those of us who feel a little bit intimidated walking into a bank, I am so excited to hear what you are doing to break down those barriers. I know there's a movement to make sure that folks who are unbanked have access to a bank account here in America who would like a bank account. We don't want folks keeping like cash under their mattresses. Or my concern these days is there could become the equivalent thereof with things like stablecoin, or I'm sorry, not stablecoin, but cryptocurrencies could be a form of not being in a bank account where you're trying to hold assets, but they're not necessarily insured. So I would love to hear some of your thoughts specifically on some of these emerging technologies and how we can work with them within the banking structure to help folks stay banked, become banked, keep their assets within banks. I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no. Thank you for that. And appreciate your experience too that you've had as you know, someone who is fairly new to this tokenized deposits kind of field and interest. I mean, of course I've been playing around with cryptocurrencies for a while now ever since Bitcoin emerged. But really have never been an active user of that. I've used it as a speculative stored value, right? Not as a currency. And I still see that to largely the same extent. But now when you bring some of these stablecoin concepts, which are much more, I think, responsive and responsible use of the technology for customer use or for transaction, actually business, versus the more speculative kind of use. I do think there's significant utility in banking for those types of technology. So on one hand, I'm very excited about the concept of being able to transact with less financial friction and cost and risk, frankly, where you have the good funds model, where you know money is there, you know the parties can attach contracts to those transactions safely. So I'm super excited about the possibilities to improve the financial safety, the well-being, and reduce the cost and the friction from our experiences. That being said, I still think we're fairly long ways away from that being the case, right? But what we're starting to experience, on the other hand, is the disruptive part of that, not necessarily the benefit. And some of that you could say, well, these banks have been built on these, you know, AS400 IBM mainframes, and they're still operating the same way. And we're not able to keep up, and we're so conservative and so risk averse that we're not willing to invest in and explore these new technologies. And then you have the compliance and regulatory regime standing on top of that, adding that extra complexity and risk aversion maybe that we all have as bankers. So that's where I'm starting to be concerned, because again, we've taken this technology and we've allowed it to enter the financial ecosystem.
Yep.
Without the guardrails and the oversight that is needed for safe operation.
Yes. Right?
And so what I fear is a lot of the customers, particularly the younger customers that are using these various apps to transact business that are not riding on the rails of a bank or a traditional financial institution, they may not be aware of what they're getting into even. They may not be aware that the money is not insured. It is not safe.
Yes.
That could disappear.
Yep.
And there's no recourse, right? No, once it disappears, there's no recourse.
Because it's essentially an investment at that point. And as banks know, when you have an investment that's kind of attached to a bank, you have to have the not insured, all those disclosures to ensure that folks know it's not FDIC insured. But when it's just stable, you know, something that's cryptocurrency or something, that they don't necessarily know that that's not something that's insured. Do you think stablecoin has a possibility of becoming, payment stablecoin becoming something that especially younger generations are really going to adopt? And how are banks going to be able to get an edge there?
I think we're going to have to rely on some of the either larger financial institutions to build a marketplace for that, or some of the tech providers and core system providers, which I really don't like the idea of further increasing our reliance on our core system providers. But I do think that's where we're going to, as a small bank, I don't have the resources and frankly, the appetite. I do have the interest, but I don't have the risk appetite to go try to build a system. And most of those systems are still based on, as I like to describe it, it's sort of like the fax machine, analogy. So it's great if I have a fax machine, but if you don't have one, mine is not useful at all.
Yes, you have to send and receive. Yes,
that's right. So if you're not on the same network, that's where I do think, I know Zelle, for example, is launching some international remittances using stablecoins.
Okay,
I know some of the larger banks have piloted creating their own own stablecoins or tokenized deposit networks. So to me, that network effect is going to be critical to enable the mass adoption of it. And so what we're doing, we are engaged with one of those networks that's emerging. We're planning to sign up with them to be part of that network. But there's some precedent for it. So I'll give you an example. We have reciprocal deposit insurance networks currently in place, right? Everything from IntraFi to ModernFi to RNT. There's several other groups that facilitate these reciprocal networks. And that, to me, that's a good proxy to really understand the power of this. So imagine if you can create a book entry network where you can share the deposits across 1,200 banks to receive and secure FDIC insurance.
Sure.
Right.
Okay.
And it's all done with contracts.
Sure.
So to me, it's a small leap fairly from that to go to smart contracts.
Okay.
Right. That could follow the deposit.
Okay.
That's backed by a stablecoin.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
So I don't think we're too far. I do see in the next 5 years, I do see that becoming a significant play. Now, let me shift to the risk to the banking system.
It's always going to be a question, is the risk.
What's the risk? And to me, what I'm fearful of, I'm not fearful of, the interest being paid by the providers to sort of mimic what an interest or yield on a savings account would be.
Okay.
To me, that's a competitive pricing issue, right? So we just have to pay interest on deposits.
Price it out the way the market dictates. Sure.
That's right. What I am worried about is the liquidity leaving the banking system.
Yes.
Right. Into treasuries or other instruments that do not support the economic growth, which has built America into the greatest country in the world, right? That's where I'm maybe a little too concerned mm-hmm. by some mm-hmm. standards. Mm-hmm. But imagine if just 10% of the liquidity leaves the banking system. It's not going to leave the large institutions.
Yes.
It's going to leave predominantly community banks,
yes.
generally speaking.
Yes.
And what is that going to do to the economic opportunity and growth and stability of our country?
That is,
and that's really the bigger concern for yeah. me than yeah. the safety and soundness is a huge concern yep. for the banks yep. and for the customers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I'm even more concerned about the macroeconomic impact mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. of that liquidity shifting to treasuries or other instruments yeah. that are not sitting on the balance sheet of community banks.
I'm glad you brought that up. That is a concern of mine as well. And I don't run a bank, but I've been working in the industry for a while, and we know that banks are chasing deposits. It's kind of like ever since the lending boom of, kind of around the pandemic, banks have really been concerned about chasing deposits. And I am deeply concerned that this shift in how consumers are storing their money or commercial accounts as well. I'm thinking a little bit more on the consumer side. It's going to take deposits out of banks. And when banks don't have deposits, they can't lend out. And then suddenly you have a Main Street business economic issue within your small towns across America and your big cities as well that rely on community banking. So I share your concern. I appreciate how you articulated that so well. What are some ways banks can start to mitigate this? I'm seeing some community banks get into potentially trying to be custodians of payment stable coins. I'm seeing some, as you laid out, your bank is also working toward getting involved in payment stable coins. Is there a way to try to corner some of that deposit activity right now? Or do we need to just wait and see if they flow into things like U.S. Treasuries, like you said?
Yeah, so I'm not aware of a lot of successful models where small banks do serve as custodians.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I have not seen that. I know of large banks like BNY and Citi mm-hmm. and Chase mm-hmm. Serving in that capacity. Mm-hmm. I'm not aware of ways that we can, as a mm-hmm. Small $1 billion, $2 billion bank,
yeah,
participate actively in that space yet. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. I do think what we can do is, look at creating infrastructure within our bank, within the existing standards that make it much more appealing, mm-hmm. particularly for the business deposits to remain with us.
Okay.
So, for example, we're launching RTP and FedNow. We're launching mm-hmm. Zelle mm-hmm. for business. Mm-hmm. We have a fantastic treasury services that facilitates payroll accounts.
Okay.
Facilitates mm-hmm. complex international even money movement. So even as a small bank, we can still compete and be extremely competitive because we have the same technologies, legacy technologies available to us as the large banks.
Sure.
We may not have the custody mm-hmm. or the other connected services as readily available, but we can make them available. We can have lockboxes. Mm-hmm. We can have complex treasury programs in place for our customers. We have a lot of very sophisticated, large, complex customers that we're able to serve. So I think that's where our playbook is focused on.
Okay.
How can we utilize the current existing infrastructure that's already in place, where there is a high level of comfort among our most liquid customers,
uh-huh.
right? Where they feel like, look, American Pride Bank is paying me a very good rate.
Okay.
Is providing me fantastic services. Is not nickel and diming me. Mm-hmm. I know my money is insured 100% of the time through yeah. reciprocal insurance.
Okay.
Up to $300 million per tax ID. We can find a way how to insure your money.
Okay.
So I'm going to just bet on that because what's the alternative mm-hmm. providing me that American Pride Bank cannot? And right now, Elizabeth, that answer is nothing.
I love hearing that. So when you're looking at your competitors in the market, you're getting ahead of it and saying we can still provide what modern business customers need.
So why would someone exactly, and another way to put it is, what is a very compelling reason for a CFO or a treasurer of a larger business that we serve to take the risk to move some exotic stablecoin tokenized deposit environment where they don't fully know how it works behind the scenes.
Yep.
Unless they receive substantially faster, cheaper transactions and more secure transactions, or substantially better yield on their idle cash.
Sure. Sure.
They will not got, they're not going to take the risk. They're not going to put their name on it, right? Why would I take the risk?
Yep.
And look, no one ever got fired, to my knowledge, by keeping the money with a good bank.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're focusing on paying out a commensurate rate. I mean, that's always been a banking concern is market rates. But you're also focusing, it sounds like, on making for smooth transactional activity for your customers. Rather than focusing on maybe what the concept of the deposit is, you're focusing on providing those transactional services that your customers need. Is that kind of fair to summarize how you're, you're focusing it? I love hearing that. And I appreciate you summarizing that, because I do think some banks are getting concerned about what the category of the deposit, rather than thinking about how their customers want to move money and making sure that that's seamless and easy for them, so the customers can keep the deposits because they're able to move what they need to do their financial business. That makes a lot of sense to me. I appreciate that approach.
Yeah. The only feature that I am really very uneducated about, full transparency, is how can you deploy the use of smart contracts?
Sure, sure.
With some of the blockchain enabled deposits, or blockchain facilitated deposits, whatever you want to say, describe them as. I think that's where I get really excited. And concerned, because we're not able to provide that. But if you can settle transactions using those currencies, I think that's where community banks, that's where we would have a significant disadvantage, because currently the payment systems that we do offer are inherently risky. Right?
Yep.
Now, we mitigate the risk of ACH.
Yep.
And wires by putting all the controls in place, make sure that we verify, not just, I mean, we're still doing callbacks, right?
Yes.
It's 21st century. We're doing callbacks.
Yes.
And this may be a shift into the AI discussion a little bit, but I think callbacks are actually going to be a lot more important than they were even a year ago, 2 years ago.
I can see where you're coming from that. If you're thinking about AI and potential fraud driven by AI, is that where you're going?
That's it.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. The human element sometimes becomes very, very important in places we didn't even realize.
I think that's where these two very, very disruptive technological advancements are actually going to be interplay for community banks. Right.
I would, because you said because. Don't mean to interrupt you. I'd love to hear your thought process behind that. Well, tell me more.
Well, I'll give you a real life example. So imagine you can link all your bank accounts, connect them to Claude, for example.
Yep.
Right. And now Claude can instantly open accounts for you because you have all your driver's licenses uploaded, you have all the connectors made.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm not saying I did that, right?
We're not endorsing this, but we're saying it could happen. Yeah.
I got right up to the line and then I started reading more. Hey, should I really link all my bank accounts to Claude? but you can do that and has been done.
Yeah.
Where you can theoretically build an agent that goes optimizes your savings for the highest rate daily.
Yep.
Right. And moves money almost daily. So to me, that creates a real risk for banks.
Yep.
From liquidity perspective.
Yes.
But also security. Right? Imagine if a bad actor gets hold of that agent.
Yep. Yep.
And now customer doesn't even know. So in a very strange way, I think we may see some efforts to reintroduce certain financial friction.
Sure.
To slow down those transactions. Kind of like we put these speed bumps, even in our ACH processing, in our wires, you put limits and controls simply because you may not know as a financial institution. And that's one thing that we may not know as a financial institution, who is actually engaging with us because of AI. And I can give you a real life example where a bank was completing a verification of change on a customer's account.
Okay.
And the customer, and they were using Microsoft Teams.
Okay.
And the customer was an AI image.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
And the phone number was changed for callback instructions.
Okay.
And wire was authorized to leave a bank into a fraudster's account.
Yikes.
Right.
Yikes.
That's happening today.
Yep.
So I think old school callback may be more relevant, but imagine if that phone number gets changed.
Yep.
So that callback may not be as relevant. So how do you really know if you know? You may be doing video calls with your customers, but then are you really talking to the real customer?
It puts know your customer into such a different light than we even thought, you know, back in the day when KYC and some of the DSA CIP stuff was put into place. It puts it into a whole new level, especially even like you said, how do you know the person on the other end of the line of the video call? Or these days with deepfakes, some people don't even realize that they are talking to someone who's wearing a mask over their own video call. It's concerning, and it takes a lot of training of staff who maybe did not think or never thought that they would need to have this level of technological prowess just to open accounts and process transactions.
Yeah. So you articulated it extremely well. So that's my concern. Mm-hmm. The other concern, what we're seeing is from the AI is, and I'll get to the positive side in a minute, which I think there's a significant transformational positive as well. But the concerns I'm starting to see, just the volume of attempts to penetrate your cybersecurity systems, defenses, or just old-fashioned fraud.
Yes. Yep.
Sending out fake accounts payable, fake bills to accounts payable. The volume of those has gone up exponentially. Mm-hmm. Banks are seeing, I know two of my banks are seeing massive increase in these attempts. Mm-hmm. We just get flooded with mail. Mm-hmm. You know, it was AI generated once you dig in, but it has the right company. It even has the right amount. I don't know how they got hold of the details, but they changed the payment instructions or tried to change the payment instructions. If you don't have proper accounts payable controls in place, where you're doing verification and you don't allow someone to change those instructions to pay, you know, randomly, you could lose your bank overnight. So there's the rise of AI has enabled and accelerated all these attempts at an exponential rate. And it has reduced the cost to the fraudsters to try to attack you. So, you know, I'm cautioning our teams to really look at everything from that perspective. You know, what is possible? Now, let me shift to the positive side.
Sounds
because
good.
That has also a positive, right? It has lots of positives. For example, just the ability to review documents.
Yes.
I'm just talking about a pure user of non-confidential, publicly available information on a bank. Just take your call report and your instructions or your sanitized monthly financial reports and statements. The time it used to take us to generate dashboards and build those dashboards, you know, it was hours and hours.
Yes.
Now on a Sunday morning, I can go through my Friday reports and I have a little tool built and it in seconds, I get amazing trend reports and analyses that used to take our CFO days to build, or hours to build.
Having that level of information and data analysis at your fingertips, that is incredible.
Yep. And then amplify that to the rest of the team. So we have, 150 employees. Mm-hmm. Imagine if each person could save 5% of their time, 10% of their time.
Yep.
And so once we truly figure out how to wall off that securely, that information, right now we're experimenting with non-confidential, publicly available data. Mm-hmm. But even that has already transformed mm-hmm. everything from review of certain financial information, mm-hmm. but even review of contracts or agreements. Mm-hmm. Clearly we have to sanitize them. We have to make sure nothing gets out that we don't want to get out.
Yep.
But just the speed of our ability to, mm-hmm. You look at the growth of our bank. We've grown almost 400% in 2 years.
That's incredible.
And a lot of that is due to the adoption of some of these technologies that we're able to move so much faster and safer, mm-hmm. by the way, because we're able to double check and spot check ourselves, make mm-hmm. sure we're not making a mistake, make sure we're not missing something. Mm-hmm. Even a quick financial analysis for a customer, mm-hmm. just offering them a rate. Okay, would you like, this is your rate option, because we always talk about it at our bank. We don't have products, we have people.
Let
me work with the customer. So even just a quick question, I don't have to name the customer. I just say, hypothetically, I have a customer who's got this kind of business. This is what they're doing. What would you recommend for them? And then I give me the two rate options mm-hmm. and analyses based on what they need, based on their cash flows. Mm-hmm. In seconds, mm-hmm. I can have a credible alternative to think through.
Nice.
And so when I call the customer, I say, well, let me give you some ideas that me and my friend Claude came up with, right?
Yep.
And we tell them that this is what we came up with.
Sure.
So it accelerates our ability to go mm-hmm. from a initial conversation yep. to closing by days.
Yep.
Right.
I love that kind of efficiency. I mean, that's incredible. And that's yep. some of that is what makes staff tear their hair. They dread coming to work on a Monday morning because they know they have to do this report or that report. And taking some of that stress off of staff and letting a computer do the work is incredible.
Yep, exactly. And I'll share with you what I share with our team, because some of them are starting to see the power of it. Mm-hmm. And of course, some of the natural inclination is to say, well, how is this going to impact me negatively?
Sure.
I get the positive, and I have to tell them candidly, look, the mission statement for this entire initiative to transform American Pride Bank into a truly AI native bank. Mm-hmm. And I share this with our board, mm-hmm. is to improve the quality of life for our people.
Nice.
It's not to make us more efficient. It's not to make us more money mm-hmm. or to reduce headcount. Mm-hmm. It's to improve the quality of life, just like it has improved for me and my wife and others that I know are proficient users of it. Mm-hmm. And because then customers win, because you come to work happy. Yep. Because you're not scrubbing spreadsheets for hours. Instead, you're actually working to serve someone instead of serving some Excel pivot table that takes you hours.
I love that.
So if you apply that lens to it, and for our bank, we had 37 employees when I started. We have almost 150 now.
Wow.
We're not trying to reduce headcount.
Sounds like you have increased headcount. You've given jobs within your community or your bank or wherever you're pulling from. Those are jobs you've created.
So. Yeah, we're trying to do is improve the quality of life for team members. So maybe eventually, may that curb how many people we hire in the future? Absolutely will. Mm-hmm. But really, we have amazing team members. And if I can imagine having someone in our deposit operations group, like our leader, Jennifer, who's one of the brightest bankers I've ever seen. If I could get 5% of her time back, it could be transformational for our bank. Or if I look at our loan operations, loan administration, mm-hmm. my colleague Laquanda, who is one of the best bankers, brightest minds I've ever worked with. Imagine if I can get 1% of her time back.
Sure. Yep.
For herself, even. She didn't have to even work more. She would just be happier. That mm-hmm. means our customers would be happier, or her colleagues would be happier.
Yep.
That's what I'm looking for. So that's the positive side of this disruption that I want to see us mm-hmm. realize in our bank mm-hmm. as quickly as and prudently as possible without, without exposing the bank to any risks. And that's the big question.
Yes.
We still haven't figured out, okay, when can you go too far, and then how do you truly understand that you've limited the exposure, that you're following all that. And yeah. So right now we're on that journey, and we're hopefully we'll have it figured out next few weeks, and we'll be off and running.
I'm excited to hear this vision from you about how you are implementing this at the community bank level. I know that this is something that is keeping boards of directors up awake at night, management teams trying to figure out how to prudently invest in emerging technologies while keeping information safe, while keeping their staff at a comfort level that they can use emerging technologies, but they're not going to misuse them, and they're not going to have, you know, that fear that this is trying to take over my job. So I really appreciate how you have laid out this vision. I forget the phrase you used specifically, but it impacted me when you said it was something about making people's lives better. And that I think that that is the beauty of technology. That's always been the best of American innovation and human innovation, is how do we make our lives better? I'm inspired hearing how you are working at your banks to use technology responsibly and quickly, because this is a very quickly developing technology. Banks that don't get on board are fearful of being left behind. As we wrap up the episode, can you share any further advice, final words for bankers in a similar position to you? It sounds like you are very comfortable in the emerging issues space. You are comfortable with new ideas and getting your head around future thinking, which I love. So what kind of encouragement and advice can you give to other folks in your shoes?
Well, I will say I spent some time recently with some of my colleagues who run other banks. Mm-hmm. And what I have found is each person, each leader is looking at this from a slightly different perspective.
Okay.
But the ones that are really succeeding, that I've seen move forward, are the ones that are willing to take the risks, but they also readily admit that this is so, exactly as you said, so fast changing. Mm-hmm. And so the bankers that I see succeeding are very comfortable in their discomfort with this.
Okay.
So we just admit this is so fast moving. This is way beyond our control. We need lots of help.
Sure.
And so, but we also know we have to look at this, mm-hmm. right? We cannot just say, mm-hmm. look, I'm going to exit this bank in the next couple of years, so I don't need to worry about it.
Yep.
And I jokingly said, look, unless you're planning to sell in the next 6 months, you have to look at this. And those that are succeeding are looking at it that way.
Okay. Being comfortable in your discomfort. I really appreciate that phrase from you. Encouraging leaders that we need to lean in. We need to look at this. But it's okay to be comfortable in your discomfort. Thank you for those words. I appreciate that. Dom, this has been an incredible 30 minutes or so of learning and being inspired by you. I deeply appreciate your time. I know you are a busy individual. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
No, and thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much for your service to our community.
Of course.
We really need it.
That's our mission.
And I'm appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you so much. To all our listeners, thank you for tuning in. This has been another episode of Banking Matters, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Holtrup.